It is the 22nd of January, and here we are at Introduction to Investments, Business 123, Introduction to Investments. I said that already. Department of Redundancy Department. My name is Frank Paiano, and if you missed the presentation today, you can listen to it online. I will show you the website soon enough. Every lecture is recorded using this little device in my left pocket here. Sometimes the students who ask a question, you can't hear it. So if I'm smart enough, what I do is I repeat the question, but my apologies. If you speak loudly, though, you can be heard. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at the syllabus. So we'll see if why you're here is if we're going to answer your question why you're here. I thank you for not saying thank you. Hey, read it. Thank you for not saying because it's a required course. Oh well. Introduction to basic investment principles, including markets, stocks, also known as equities, bonds, also known as fixed income debt instruments, fixed debt, mutual funds, investment companies is the legal term, insurance products, interpretation of financial statements and other financial data and information, brokerage accounts, and the relationship of economic and political conditions to investing. We'll spend very little time on politics. What are we going to look at, folks? Investment environments, risk and return. That's the entire semester in one phrase, risk versus return. Mutual funds, stocks, bonds, markets and transactions, investment strategies and tools, portfolio management and asset allocation, options and futures contracts, George, real estate and other investments. Now, the book is not just one book. I don't care which one you use. There are actually the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th out there now. You can get the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, or if you want to pay for the 7th, go ahead. I'm going to show you the website. I'm going to show you where you can get them for $10, $20, $30. There are two on reserve in the library that you can use. You can't take them out of the library, but you can use them in the library. And so the book is very dry, but it contains more information than we can pack into the entire course. Some people say, do I have to buy the book? And I think, well, you know, I'm not going to tell you yes. I'm not going to tell you no. But I will tell you that the presentations are the most important. The information that's in the presentations is the most important information you need to know for the exams, for the assignments. There's a whole lot of stuff that we do online. If it were up to me, I would not have a book. But it is not up to me. If it were up to me, I would have you read this book, but it's not a college-level book. One Up on Wall Street. That's the first book who anybody wants to invest. It's One Up. Oh, no, that's right. One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. This is the book that this gentleman by the name of Peter Lynch wrote, and we'll discuss it in more detail later on. But he really just does a phenomenal job of explaining the dangers, the opportunities, the craziness involved, but it's not a college-level text, so I can't use it in the classroom. And I will tell you that McGraw-Hill is a very smart company, and they have made it so that colleges have to use college-level textbooks, and they charge you $200 or $300 for a book that really should cost you about $30. Oh, well. You need a notebook, and I suggest to you strongly that you get a three-ring binder or something along the same lines, because I'm going to give you copious, you like that word, copious? It's English, it means a lot, right? Copious notes. And I have a three-ring punch here for you to use, and I will mostly remember to bring that. The problem with these things right here, not picking on, your name again is?
Isaiah.
The problem with these things is it's easy for these to get, you know, lost and... I'm not trying to pick on you or anything, but go ahead and use it. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I'm going to say, take out your handout from, you know, chapter 4. Take out this. So you need to be able to find it. And people are like, oh, I can't find it. You need a calculator. Go to the 99-cent store. Buy five. Five 99-cent calculators, because that's all you need. Add, subtract, multiply, and divide. You with me? You don't need a calculator that can launch the space shuttle. You don't need a computer. You can use a computer. You can use a tablet. Someone's got a tablet. You can use a tablet. All you need is add, subtract. You don't even need squirt. You know what squirt is? Yeah, square root. You don't need square root. You don't even need that. You know, that's how easy the arithmetic is here. Now, conceptually, it can get a little tricky, but there's no algebra that we're going to do or any like that. Please don't use your cell phone. Turn them off because there's nothing that important. Yes, if your car is going to have a baby or your sister needs a transmission, tell me before class. I might have to run out. But I can't stand when people get up and walk out. Phones have gotten bigger. Remember when they were smaller? I know some of you maybe not. They were really small and you flipped them. When somebody's phone would go off, I would grab it and put them in the... Oh, I didn't get it back to them. Here's your phone. Yes.
Can I use the calculator on my phone?
No, I don't want you to use the calculator on your phone. I don't want your phone going off. I don't want you texting, chatting with that woman in Chicago that you think is a woman. I don't want you doing it. Okay? I want your attention up here, on your book. You see, it's the millennials really good. And they think we don't know, right? They think... Yeah, but 99-cent store. Okay? Don't go to $4 one day. I mean, $5. Starbucks. Don't go to Starbucks one day and buy five 99-cent calculators. And that's all you need for the rest of the semester. Okay. Dedication, organization, motivation, hard work, and jokes. Who's got a good joke? Nobody? Got to hear my bad joke. Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar? No, you didn't hear about the alligator? Well, this alligator walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? And orders a beer, right? And the bartender gives him the beer, and the alligator's drinking his beer. And the bartender looks at him and says, "Are you having troubles at home? Any problems with the wife?" And the alligator says, "No." And the bartender says, "How about work? Your boss giving you a hassle?" "No, everything's fine," the alligator says. The bartender says, "Why the long face?" Because he's an alligator. You might have heard it with a horse. The horse has a long face. So you want to bring good jokes on Tuesday?
For sure.
Because they get worse. All right, now, attendance and lateness. Don't miss class. Your grade depends on it. Please don't come late to lecture. Now, that doesn't mean if you're late every once in a while, you should not. "Oh, I'm not going to come because I'm 15 minutes late." Come, please come. But just don't. It's the people who do it perennially. And studies show that it's a high correlation between lateness and absence and bad grades. So make friends. It's not an excuse. "I was absent that day." We're going to see the website. Everything's on the website. You can listen to the presentation that you missed. You can listen to the recorded lecture. All the handouts are on the website. The grades. You want to get an A? Don't want to get an A? Yeah? I hope so. This is the normal curve, or the normal distribution, the bell curve. And supposedly we got lots of A's and a few F's and a few A's and then some more B's and D's and A's and F's. But is that what usually happens at the community college level? And not the only one who experiences this. No. What we see is a bimodal, it's called, bimodal distribution. Where we see lots of people doing poorly, a few in the middle, and then lots of people doing well. I'm not happy about this. I don't want this to happen. I don't want anybody to fail. I want every single one of you to get an A. Do you understand? So I'm going to make you a deal. If every single one of you get an A for the next 10 years until 2025, every time I meet somebody new, we'll introduce myself. "Hi, my name is Frank Paiano, and my business 123 Introduction to Investments class, spring 2015, all got A's." Is that a deal? So you're all going to strive to get an A, right? I'll write it out. If you want a contract, I'll write it out. I think verbal's good enough. I got plenty of witnesses. But I'll do it because I want you to succeed. In fact, we were extorted not extorted for money. We were extorted to be dope for our students. And I thought, well, I got that one. I figured it. This guy came and talked because we have these pre-semester days where we tell ourselves how wonderful we are. And he was from the cap or the hat or the scarf. He was from the hood. He was from the hood. Right. He was from the hood, from East Oakland. And he said that you got to be dope for your students. And I said, I got that one. All right. I don't have to worry about being dope for them. Anyway, what happens when people are getting an F and a D? What do they do? Well, if you get the F or D, you can wind up being put on probation or losing your financial aid. But what do the counselors tell you to do? Drop the class. So this is what happens. We wind up with some kind of distribution like this. And they say, oh, you have great inflation. No. I want every single person to get an A. I will be so proud of you if you do that. Because I'm not going to lower my standards. If someone tells you to lower your standards, you tell them up yours. It's a joke. Up yours. Okay. But if you all got Fs, I will dutifully click F on the grade putting her in her, and I will cry my eyes out, but that's what I'll do. Make sense? Time requirements. The college, and originally every college, for every one unit of class, you expect two hours outside of class. So that's about 6 hours. Can you give me a half an hour a day? 6 hours is about an hour a day. Give me a half an hour a day. Review your notes. Read the book. Listen to any parts of the presentation that you weren't clear about. Go through the presentation. Turn it into flashcards. Turn it into, I give you one page of notes, handwritten, front and back on it, on a regular sheet of paper. Don't come in with a poster board. But handwritten notes front and back to do your exam. And people say, oh, he's so nice. No. If you do that, if you organize your thoughts on a single sheet of paper, front and back, you will have done what students are supposed to do. You will have studied. Make sense? Okay. Learning requires repetition. Don't try to do it all in one day. That's not learning. Every day is how you learn. If you need accommodations, contact me. I am very happy to help. Come on in. Come on in. Can you sit here? Come on. No, sit over there. Over there. It'll be easier for you. I'll have to put it in your back. That's okay. Keep going. Keep going. Gilda? Keep going. Keep going over there. Yeah. Okay. Academic Success Center. If your study skills are not that strong, you want to go to the Academic Success Center. It's an awesome place. They will help you with your study skills. And the studies show that if you work together, if you study together, make friends, study together, you will do better. That's what the studies show. How do you get in touch with me? Well, there's my phone number at home. There's my phone number here. I can make an appointment for you before this class or after this class, but sometimes I have a meeting I have to go to at 11 o'clock. My office hour is at 1:30. At the 2:30, 1:30 to 3:30, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then of course Mondays and Wednesdays if you're here on campus. But I will make an appointment with you. I will meet with you over the phone, online, whatever. I am here to help you. Student learning outcomes, you can just cross that out. That's just student learning objectives. That's just stupid stuff that somebody from getting their PhD makes us do. But the most important thing on this first page is the website. What's the website? Everyone should say Wonder Professor. What's the website? Wonder Professor. Okay. Can you remember Wonder Bread? Can you remember Wonder Woman? No. No, you can't remember. Can you remember Wonder? I wanted something people could remember because the website they give us is the website /tilde and then your first initial and your last name. And you think you're going to remember that? No. So if you click on that, what it does is it takes you to Wonder Professor. So there's Wonder Professor. Remember Wonder Professor. There's my better side. There's my bike. Have you looked at Rate My Professor? I didn't want to look. My office mate said, you ought to look. I said, no. She goes, come on, they like you. Okay. I looked. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll put it up there. And then I looked at other professors. I said, I know he's a jerk. Yeah, they're students. Now, you have to be careful because sometimes it's the professor's fault, teacher's fault, because the student didn't do well, so you have to be careful about that. But that's a very good tool. I wish we had it when I was in. I looked up some of my professors from when I was in I went to school a long time ago. And there was this one guy who was a horrible professor. Just horrible. Didn't know his... What? He couldn't program his way out of a paper bag. And he's still teaching there. And the reviews were horrible. And I said, you know, this guy, I had this guy back in 1975. That's how old I am. And he hasn't gotten any better, has he? No, he's still really terrible. So, but follow, you know, take a look. There's some jokes and some other stuff on here that you might want to look at up and down. But what's the most important thing for you? Right here. Business 123, Introduction to Investments, Spring 2015. And so everything we do, all the handouts, all the presentations, here are the audio and the audiovisual lectures for the online students that you can watch if you want to. The recorded lectures will be down here, usually by the end of the day, unless there's some technical problems. And so I gave you the syllabus, right? Got the syllabus in your hot little hands? Here it is. Syllabus. Business 12301, Tuesday, Thursday. Bingo. You understand? So if you lose a handout or you miss a class or whatever, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Okay, you got to say it. And I know you think you might think I'm crazy. You might be right. But when you say it, it changes different chemical reactions in your head than when you hear it and when you see it. So what's the website?
WonderProfessor.com.
You got to put the .com in it. If you, not Professor Wonder. Now, he's a magician. He's a balloon artist, but Wonder Professor. Okay, fine. Now, look at the bottom of the page. There are links to various places where you can get the book for $10. The 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th, the 7th they changed a little bit. The 3rd edition is a little different. So I would not buy the 3rd edition. You can, and if you do, tell me and I'll just tell you, okay, this chapter they moved over here, that's all this. But it's all the same. It's basically all the same. And you can see it for $10-$15. Otai Books across the street is selling the 4th edition for $30, you know, $32 new, $27.50 used. So you can get the book, go to the library. It's actually a very good book as college textbooks go. But it's very dry. Dry. If nothing else, go to the library, read chapter 1, because that's the best chapter. Chapter 1 is their best chapter. Read that, and if you like it, maybe you want to buy it. But everything that is on the website is what you need to concentrate, because there'll be various links to other places. Questions, thoughts? Now, what's at the bottom of the page, the very bottom? What's that? That's the back button. Takes you back. See what you're up against? They don't get any better. No. Okay. So let's get started. You ready? Any questions about the syllabus? Now some professors will give you a quiz on the syllabus. I think it's a little over the top. But on the back is our schedule. Our class schedule. And we normally will, come on, there's rooms over here, guys. We normally will follow this fairly consistently. If we get behind, I don't care. I want you to learn what we go over. Because at the end of the semester, there's some things that are not that, except for George. Options and futures, I hope to scare you away from. So if we have to eject them at the end of the semester, I'll sit down with George and explain why he's a goofball for putting his money there. He's only lost $200. He's a lucky guy instead of losing $15,000. But we start with a perspective. And I know some of you have seen this. I apologize. There's a little bit of overlap. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos, drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Now, some of you already know when this was written. When was it written? You saw that on Weasel News last night? Skunk News? Fox News, right, Fox News, I'm sorry. With Blowhard O'Reilly? Yeah, Fox News. And so, when was this written? When was this said? If you ask people, often they will say Great Depression, World War II, right? last week, right? Last week, ISIS and crisis and ISIS and Obama is going to destroy everything. I'll never forget. It was January 21st, I think, 2009, and one of my students, who's sitting right over there, I'm old, she said, well, her family back in Texas, she was from Texas, had kept their students, their children, home from school that day because the Antichrist had been elevated and the end of the world was coming, the rapture was coming, the Armageddon was going to happen. And I thought, okay, fine. This is, it was 2009. No, it was 1847, folks. You will always hear about gloom and doom. Did they have serious problems in 1847? Yeah, they did. Yeah, because they still had slavery. And the nation was about the peculiar institution. Isn't that a great name? Don't call it slavery. Call it the peculiar institution. And the nation, yeah, turn those off. Just turn them off. And the nation was, they do have an off button. I know you millennials don't believe that, but you can turn it. If you have nothing else, pull the battery out. That'll do it. Mine keeps turning back on. I have one that's probably the worst phone ever built. I don't know what it's been. I turn it off and it turns itself back on. Have you known that? Have you ever had a phone like that?
Get a smartphone.
No, I don't want a smartphone. I don't want a phone. What? Ask my son. Yeah. He said they don't need a smartphone. He tells me too. He says, hey, you don't need one. Okay. Because my son works with phones. He does technical writing. He writes the website manuals that you guys never go to check up on your phone. And for Sprint. But he doesn't work for Sprint. He works for a subcontractor. And so he gets all the phones in before anybody else sees them. And they come in just confidential. And he has a safe. He puts them in a safe. And I said, come on, John. Didn't you get an iPhone 6? Didn't you get a 6? He goes, no. I said, yes, you did. I go, let me see it. I won't show anybody. Okay, where the hell was I? Okay. where was I? It doesn't matter. There will always be people who will tell you that the end of the world is nigh. And you know what? Someday they're going to be right. Someday the world's going to end. But history shows us that if you're optimistic, not only will you be more prosperous, you'll also be happier and you'll live longer. And the pessimists will say, well, just because you're not being realistic. You're not well informed. And there will always be problems. We will fix some problems, we'll create other problems, and some problems will never go away. But if you are optimistic and the world doesn't end, and you do what we learn how to do in these classes, you should do well as lucky members of the great American economic machine. Because now it's a global machine, and there are still parts that are not functioning that well, and there will always be parts that are not functioning that well. But over the last 200 or so years, we've been very prosperous. And I firmly believe, now I might be wrong, that the next 20 to 30 years should be the most prosperous years in the history of the world. Doesn't mean I'm right. And we could blow ourselves up, or Ebola could become all the rage. But, yes, George.
I just wanted to point out that since the president took office,
I know. Don't confuse the Republicans with the facts.
The stock market.
Yes. Don't. Well, you know what? Is it really Obama? No. No. What is it? Dumb luck. The guy came in at the very moment the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression hit. So there was no place else to go, right? And yet, if you remember, I don't know if you remember, the market fell for another month. Another month or 6 weeks after he was, until March 9th. And so people say, it's all Obama's fault. I say, no, it was falling like a knife when he came in. It wasn't his fault, and it's not his fault that it's gotten better. Although he, I must admit, his team, led by Paul Volcker, Tim Geithner, and Bernanke, with the help of Bernanke, they did a whole lot that was good. They were held back by a lot of what the Congress would not do. But you're right. I know Obama's been one of the best presidents for the market ever. And they hate him. They absolutely hate him. It's so bizarre. Okay, so let's get started. Now, what I want, I apologize if I'm lagging, but we're on task. What I want to impress upon you is that you do not need any prior investment experience. Do you understand? This is an introduction to investment class. You don't have to know about what options and futures are, and you don't even know what stocks are. We'll talk about those. You don't have to understand what they talk about on the television and Market Watch and CNBC. No. Ignore all that for a while. Come back to it later. Because what we're going to do is start with chapter 1. But what I did is I took a little bit from chapter 3 and I added some lecture notes. What I've done is tried to create what I believe, if I were to write a introduction to investments class, should be the first chapter. Because A Brief History of Risk and Return is actually the first chapter, and it is awesome. But then they wait until chapter 3 to go over the overview of security types. And they go into far too much detail in chapter 3. So if you start reading chapter 3 and you say, this is ridiculous, just close the book. Because they go into too much detail. What you have to know is what's here, and I'll show you. And then they don't do a very good job of discussing short-term investments. We'll do that in a single lecture, get it out of the way. But here it is, folks. You got to remember this line. Now, I want to put this word, change that word. But this guy figured it out, 60, 70 years ago. In investing money, the amount of interest you want, now I would put reward or return, because interest is just one type of way to make money. There's dividends, capital gains, rent, options and futures. The amount of interest you want should depend on whether you want to eat well or whether you want to sleep well. Do you understand? Do you want to eat well? I want to be, dressed in fine threads, flashy car, fancy clothes. I want to make a lot of money. Well, then at night you're going to be going, because investments are very risky when you want to eat well. If you want to sleep well, you want investments that are very staid and stodgy and boring. Well, great. You'll sleep well, but you won't earn a lot of money. You understand? That's the whole semester in a nutshell. Now, we've got a lot more to do than just that, but that's the idea. We start with a definition. And if you see something in italics, just figure that's going to be on the test. Any vehicle into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income or that its value will be preserved or increased or both. So what we're looking for is cash flow or capital gains, an increase in the value, or both. Are you with me? We can have both. We can have neither if we get stuck with the wrong investment. We can lose money. And here it is. Mr. Benjamin Graham, will discuss him in more detail later. This was Warren Buffett's teacher. He died in 1975, and we'll discuss him much in more detail. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. Speculation, trading, gambling. We don't use that word, but gambling. Returns come in all shapes and sizes, from income, interest, dividends, rent. We also call those cash flows. And then increased value or decreased value, capital gains, capital appreciation. Yippee! Capital gains, capital appreciation. Capital losses. Yeah, right. And so now what we're going to do is fly over the investment landscape at 40,000 feet, because they come in all shapes, flavors, and sizes. The first distinction we will make is whether it is a security or a property, a hard asset. So security is a very unfortunate word. In fact, we used to call this class investments and securities, and people will go, "Well, I'm not an administration of justice major." So, no, not that type of security. Security is an investment that represents debt or ownership, or the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership. It's I don't know. That makes it tricky. But Think about financial investments, such as stocks, bonds, mutual funds. You don't have to know what the hell they are, but those are all securities. Also, options, futures, foreign exchange contracts, these are also securities. They are bought and sold, and they're not pieces of paper anymore. That's what they used to be. They used to actually give you a piece of paper, and it said, you know, I own 10 shares of IBM. But not anymore. It's all electronic. So people say they used to be pieces of paper. No, they're now they're electronic bits. The other type of investment is property, hard assets, real estate, precious metals, collectibles, art, tangible assets, commodities, wheat, corn, soybeans, oil. And then the third one, which we're not going to discuss, you know, hardly at all, are personal investments. Personal investments, folks, are often the best investment you'll ever make. And one of the most important ones, in my personal opinion, is education. I'm not biased, of course. I just get my paycheck from teaching. But do you believe that college is a good investment? You're here.
Oh, no, Daddy and Mommy told you had to come. We had to start paying rent.
I had one guy, one student, but one of his father called up and said, "Now, George Tirebiter is in your class, right?" I said, "Well, sir, I can't tell you that. You know, he's an adult. We can't give out that information." He goes, "Well, if he goes to school, he can stay and we have to pay rent. But if he doesn't go to school, I want him out of his house. He's been a bum." And I said, "Well, here's what I can't tell you that. But what I can do is if he doesn't show up for class, I can call the number. Is this the number that's on his? Yes, this is the number that's on his account. I can call and say, 'Hey, George, where are you? We're looking for you.'" And he goes, "Oh, I understand. Okay." And, Cool. Okay, anyway, I thought I'd relate that to you. So you got that? Security, financial investment versus property. The next one is whether it's a primary asset or whether it is a derivative. And we're going to learn the term derivative, but all I want you to know is that these things are dangerous. They are speculative, which is a way of saying gambling, futures and options. Those are the only things you have to know about derivatives for this class, for this chapter. Eventually we'll learn about them, but at the end of the semester. And then primary assets are broken up into debt, where you lend your money to somebody, or equity, where you're actually part owner. Debt is funds lent in exchange for interest income and the promised repayment of the loan at a given future date. Bonds, savings accounts, CDs, money markets, those are all debt instruments. Equity are interests where you are part owner, or you're the entire owner. Businesses, partnerships, sole proprietorships. If you take in Business 120, when you take Business 120, they'll talk about corporations versus sole proprietorships versus partnerships. And stocks, of course, are the... In fact, when we use the word equity, we almost always mean stocks, which are the widely talked about investment. Make sense? Now, some people in the industry do not classify derivatives as investments. They call them speculations. Benjamin Graham would say, "Oh no, those are speculations," which is a fancy term for gambling. The next distinction we're going to make is whether it is a direct investment or an indirect investment. And this is still a little fuzzy, folks. All you have to understand is what's here on the, the slide. When you have a direct investment, your name is on that investment, whether electronically or in a deed at the county courthouse, if it's a case of the real estate. If it's an indirect investment, you still are the investor. Don't worry, they're not going to run away with your money, but you are not in control of what is going on. You're a passive, sometimes called a passive investor, and that is a REIT, a real estate investment trust, which we'll discuss later on. It's a way to invest in real estate, not being a landlord. A mutual fund, where you give your money to the mutual fund managers, they decide what to buy. Okay, you can't call them up and say, I think you ought to buy Apple now. They'll go, oh, thank you very much. Do you understand? Direct versus indirect. Just go like this if you don't understand what I'm talking about. Yeah? Okay. Question. Don't even know where to ask? Okay. If you, yes.
So like silent partners?
Yeah, you can think of them as silent partners. When you own a building or a real estate investment, your name is on that title. So anybody could go down to the county courthouse, or in this case, the county admin building on Pacific Highway, and look up that address, and it'll have your name there. That's a direct investment. When you own a stock, your name is on the stock. Now, it's not a piece of paper anymore. It's electronic. And you can actually get the piece of paper, but they'll say, go away. We'll charge you $50 to do it. Whereas when you invest in a mutual fund or a real estate investment trust, you own those shares. You own that piece of the real estate investment trust, which they own shopping centers and warehouses and apartment complexes, or you own a piece of that mutual fund. But you don't decide what real estate we're going to buy or what stock we're going to buy. Does that make sense? I don't want to go into any more than that because that's it. That's the difference. And that's all you have to understand. And, of course, we don't even know what a mutual fund is yet. We will when we get to Chapter 4. We don't know what a real estate investment is. We'll get later on in the semester when we talk about real estate as an investment. But that's the idea. Whether you're in control or somebody else is in control. Questions? Am I going too fast? Going too slow? Okay. Now, domestic, global, and international. Domestic is pretty straightforward. That means the entity is based in the United States. Global and international are a little trickier, folks. Because when you hear the terms global and international, don't you think they mean the same thing? Yeah, most people would. But in the financial world, no. International is also sometimes called foreign, but not as much as it used to be. This means outside the United States. Global is everyone. Todo el mundo. All the world. So you have to understand that when you work in the financial world because you will see an investment that says, oh, this is international. And you might think it includes the United States. No, it doesn't. But these distinctions have become very, very fuzzy. There are companies that are based in the United States that do a larger percentage, a majority of their operations outside the United States. You ever hear of Coca-Cola? 80% of their revenue is outside the United States. 80%. So they can lose the entire United States as a market and still have 80% of what they're making. Not they don't want to. I'm not saying they should. But you understand? And there are companies that are based outside the United States that do a majority of their business inside the United States. So those distinctions are not as important as they used to be. The world is a very small place these days economically. A very smart person said that once. 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the United States and Canada. 90% of the parts in the Toyota Sienna, which is interestingly enough built in Indiana, come from the U.S. and Canada. Which one is the more American car? How do you get more American than buying a Ford Mustang? You buy a Toyota Sienna, right? What's the largest car factory in the United States? Where is it and who owns it? Not in Detroit. South Carolina BMW. Every Z4, every Z3 around the world is built in the U.S. Bizarre, huh? It's pretty bizarre. I first started going down to Mexico several years ago. And I was checking out everything. You could buy Fords, Chevys, Dodges, all built in Mexico, and BMWs, Hondas, Toyotas, all built in the United States, in Mexico. Figure that one out. Okay, so let's take a look at some companies that you may have heard of. You ever heard of most of these companies? Which ones do you think are foreign? Which ones do you think are domestic? Just pick out one. Which one?
Budweiser.
Where is Bud based?
St. Louis,
right? Not anymore. Foreign, yeah. It's now owned by InBev. It's called InBev Anheuser-Busch, which is a Brazilian-Belgian conglomerate that I think makes, I forget what they're known for. Guinness? Do they make Guinness? They own Guinness? They own a lot of booze. Okay, how about Shell Oil? Houston, right? Houston, you know, it's foreign. Royal Dutch Petroleum is the real name of Shell Oil, although they own a bunch of Houston. Ben and Jerry's. You don't have to be right. Come on. Wake up. What? No, that's fine. It's owned by Unilever. They used to be based in Vermont, but now they're based outside the United States. How about Farmers Insurance? No, that's fine. It used to be based in L.A., now it's owned by Zurich, Switzerland, Scudder. How about ARCO? BP. Remember, I don't know if you remember, but in 2010, they had the ARCO sign that said, a BP company. And then after the spill in the Gulf, they took away the BP company. This is ARCO now. How about Gerber? No, that's foreign too. How about Carnation? That's foreign. Cup of Soup? Foreign. Fox News? Isn't it something? I mean, if you don't believe what Fox News believes, then you're a foreigner. You're a commie. You're a traitor. They're based in Australia. News Corp. Seagram's. Canadian Bayer. German Vaseline. UK Friskies. French Motel 6. French 7-Eleven. Yeah, this is a real interesting one. 7-Eleven started in the Southland. The corporation was started in Texas somewhere. I think in Dallas, I'm not sure. And then they exported it to the rest of the world. And they had 7-Eleven Japan. 7-Eleven Japan exploded because the Japanese love small stores. I mean, that's their culture. Rita probably knows a little bit more about this than I do. And then they got so popular, so prosperous, they turned around and bought the United States company. So now the Japanese 7-Eleven owns the United States. And I don't know if you noticed, they haven't missed Mexico. They saw those OXOs popping up around Mexico, so now you get 7-Eleven in Mexico. And I want to buy one of those 7-Elevens in Mexico. And by the way, if you do want to own a business, 7-Eleven is one of the best franchises, in my humble opinion, because they do not want you to fail. They will... Now, and one of the best reasons I think it's the best is because you don't need a couple $1 million and 30-year waiting time period to get a McDonald's. Because the McDonald's is certainly the most golden opportunity, but they're really hard to get, and you have to come up with a ton of money. 7-Eleven, you got $100,000, $200,000, you can pick up a 7-Eleven, and they will hold your hand. They will literally hold your hand. So check it out. What about Volvo and Saab? No. For almost 20 years, Volvo was owned by Ford, Saab was owned by GM, but in the 2008-2009, what did they do? They sold them. Now Volvo is owned by a Chinese company, and Saab is owned by Stryker or something like that. Anybody in the cars? Anybody own a Saab? Talk to Saab owners. They love their cars. They love their cars, but the problem is they never sold enough of them. Supposedly, really, I've never driven one, so they're supposed to be really nice cars. So figure that one out. Make sense? Is the world topsy-turvy? Exactly. We are global. There's no way to get around this, folks. You can hide from the fact. You can curse it, whatever. It is a fact. I love, remember the H1N1 virus? The swine flu? What was it called? Pig flu? Yeah. Started in Mexico. Actually, it didn't really start in Mexico. It was imported from the east. But it got really big in Mexico. And Schwarzenegger, the governor, remember the Gropinator? We need to close the borders! Bad idea. Where did all the masks come from? Mexico. Right. So. Okay. Speaking of global investing... Which country had the best average annual return over the past 40 years? Now, this is the top 18 countries according to per capita income. You may have heard that China has overtaken the United States in terms of the largest economy. Yes, but on a per capita basis, no. They are very far behind in terms of per person. So here they are, folks, in alphabetical order. Which company do you, country do you think had the best return over the last 25 years? Germany. Who said?
Norway.
Germany.
Norway.
Norway.
Switzerland.
You're getting close. It was Sweden. Netherlands, Denmark, Switzerland. What? These countries are communist. They have universal health care. And the students don't have to pay their tuition. Commies. How dare they have a better return than the United States? Now, what's going on with it? What's going on with Italy and Japan? Don't they build the best cars, Japan? What's going on here? Demographics. If you're a woman in Italy or Japan, they will pay you to have a baby. Because it's hard to grow an economy when the population is shrinking. What have we done in the United States to increase our population? Immigration, historically. So when we need people, what do? Come here, come here, come here, come here. And then when the economy does bad, what do? Get away, get away, get away, get away. But, hey, would you be happy with 9.8%? Yeah, I would. I don't know about you. We'll see what you kind of return you need. But look at that. Sweden, how could those darn Swedes? Supposedly people love their Volvos, love their Saabs. All right, now, how are we doing for time? Not bad. The next category is the time horizon. And this really is the most important decision an investor has to make before they choose anything. Are you in it for the short term, intermediate term, or long term? Because that, more than anything else, dictates what your options are. Doesn't dictate what you necessarily have to invest in, but there are some things that you just really should not invest in if you're in it for the short term or if you're in it for the long term. And these are the general guidelines in the industry, although I take a little longer view. Short term for me is 1 to 2, maybe even 3 years. Intermediate, 3, 5, 6, or 7. And 7 years or longer. If you've taken the Business 121 class, you know what my terms are. But this is what you're going to see in the industry. About a year, up to a year or so. Anywhere from 2 to 4, 5 years. And then anything greater than 5 years is normally considered long term. Very interesting for individuals. For companies, 5 years, or for the Caltrans, is 5 years. That's next to tomorrow. You know all the stuff going on at 805? It's just getting started. Wait till you see what they're going to do to Palomar. Palomar, you know what it's worth? The number one dangerous intersection in San Diego County, and the one priority on their list is Palomar and Industrial Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
It is so damn dangerous. I've ridden on my bike. I don't care. I'll do it. But most people think, you're nuts. And they're going to completely redo that. Palomar is supposed to go underneath the train tracks, and then Industrial Boulevard will go over, and who the hell knows how to figure that one out. Okay, and then liquid versus, how are we doing for time? Not bad. Liquid versus illiquid investments. A liquid investment, that's an I, is an investment that allows you to easily convert it to cash. There's a ready market to purchase your investment, change of ownership happens quickly. Illiquid investments, and the poster child for this is real estate. They take time. They don't sell like this, except during nutcases time. In 2005, if you needed to sell your house, you put up a sign on Thursday. By Sunday, you sold it. And it didn't change hands for another several weeks, but that's how fast it happened. But normally it takes about 3-6 months to sell a house. Sometimes collectibles, you got this baseball card collection and it's worth a lot of money, but you can't just call up a broker and happen overnight. It's going to take a while. Whereas stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate investment trusts, they all, tomorrow, they're gone. And now, last, low risk, moderate risk, and high risk, and then what is often called speculative risk. These are my guidelines. The books are a little higher. I don't like the books, but you decide. But if you hear 2, 3, 4%, normally that's low risk. Right now, not necessarily, because right now there's a little bit of a strange thing going on. We'll discuss when we get the bonds. But normally 2 to 5%. Moderate risk, 4, 5, 6, 7%. Right now, not the case. 8 to 10. I tell people 8 to 10. You want 8 to 10? That's good. You know, we can do that over the long term, unless the world doesn't end. But anything greater than 12% or 10%, even 10%. I tell people you want. And then I show them that there are people who have done it with not too much risk, but they've done it. But anything. And as we said, speculation by many people is not considered investing. You remember the definition by Mr. Benjamin Graham. Anything that doesn't, after careful analysis, guarantee that we're going to do well in the long term, that's speculative gambling. Real quick. When you hear the word risk, you think of the word danger, right? And harm. And this is the definition you'd look up in the dictionary. The possibility of suffering harm or loss. What we're going to see next week is that that's not what the investment community uses. They use a different measure altogether. And so we'll see that we're a little off base in terms of investment community. So you have to be careful when you use the word risk to people who don't understand this. But still, it still connotates danger. In general, the higher the expectation of return, do you want to eat well? The higher the risk level, you ain't going to sleep well. So now, let's take the last few moments of today and discuss some examples. Looking at the different categories, different aspects, different characteristics of investments. What type of investment is a Bank of America passbook savings account? And we don't usually use the word passbook anymore, but some people tell me they still get a passbook from their bank. Anybody still get a passbook? Looks like a passport. And they stamp it. Anybody still have that? The credit unions got rid of those years ago. Okay, so you go to Bank of America and you open up a savings account. Is it a security or is it a property? It's a security, right. It's a financial investment. It's not a hard asset. Debt or equity? It's debt because you're lending your money to Bank of America. You understand? You don't own part of Bank of America. You're lending your money, and they promise to pay you interest. And they promise to pay you the money back. Is it direct or indirect?
Direct.
Don't be worried about making a mistake. Nobody cares. It's direct because your name is on the passbook. Is it domestic or foreign?
Domestic.
Yeah, Bank of America is still... Where is it based,
Charlotte.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina, yeah. Used to be San Francisco. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term?
Intermediate.
In general, savings accounts should be considered short-term. It depends on the individual. But what we're going to see is that if you have a 3, 5, 10-year time horizon or longer, don't put it in a savings account. That's not the best choice. But some people might say, no, that's where I'm putting it. I know it'll be there. Is it low, moderate, or high risk?
Low.
In fact, they ain't no risk. Because what's going to happen if Bank of Armenia goes under? Right. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, Treasury, will pay you up to $250,000. Is it liquid or illiquid?
Liquid.
Very liquid. You go to Bank of America, I want my money, here it is. What about Nestle's? Nestle Foods, N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Is it a security or is it a property? It's a security. It's a stock. It's a claim on the ownership's assets. It's part of the ownership. Is it debt or equity?
Equity.
You are part owner of Nestle. Direct or indirect?
Direct.
Your name's on the stock. Now, they don't. If you ask for them, they'll give you a document, but they won't want to do it. They'll charge you $50 to do that. Domestic or foreign?
Foreign.
Yeah, it's the world's largest food company, but it's a company which is a country unto itself. It's based in Switzerland, but they're everywhere around the world. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term?
Long-term.
In general, stocks should be considered long-term. Nestle A, not going anywhere. So you might throw them into the intermediate term. But in general, stocks are long term. Low, mediate, or high risk? In general, stocks should be considered high risk because they bounce all over the place. But Nestle, we might throw them into the moderate world. But don't say it's low because the stock market as a whole can fall 20% tomorrow. It will someday. I don't know when. Well, we're not going to do any mutual funds yet. But yeah, mutual funds are considered, well, it depends on what type. But bonds would be moderate, money market low, and stocks high. Liquid or illiquid?
Liquid.
No, very liquid. Somebody wants yours Nestle stock. Somebody's going to want your stock. They'll buy it from you. It's gone next day. How about Southwestern College Propositions AA and R bonds? Have you heard about these? They are bonds. Dave, you see that stadium? Do we have a bake sale to build that stadium? No. We went to the voters of the South Bay and said, hey, we're Southwestern Community College. Will you let us make these loans, these bonds, to build that stadium? And they said, sure, we will. They don't realize they're going to be paying for them the next 30 years from the property taxes, but they are. And so they are a bond. Is it a security or property?
Security.
It's a financial investment that can be traded. Is it debt or equity?
Debt.
You are lending your money to Southwestern Community College, and Southwestern Community College is going to pay you interest and pay you back the principal. Is it direct or indirect?
Direct.
Your name's on the bond, although it's not a document anymore. It's all electronic. Domestic or foreign? I know some people call us Tijuana Tech, but there is an Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana. Anybody knows? Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term?
Long-term.
Most people who do buy bonds, and we'll see, they buy them for the long-term. They buy them for the income. Although you could think of it as intermediate-term. Short-term, I wouldn't put them in that category. Low, moderate, or high risk? Yeah, you might put it. They are rated, we'll see. They're rated pretty well. But most people will put them in moderate because bonds go up and down, as we'll see. And liquid or illiquid? No, they're liquid. Somebody will buy them. Somebody will buy them from you. But sometimes bonds are illiquid. Sometimes if they're a bond that's not from a company or an entity that's not doing well, nobody wants to buy them from you. But normally somebody will buy your bonds. Bonds do not trade as much as stocks, as we'll see. Stocks are trading all the time. Bonds people tend to hold on to for the income. So they are liquid. How about a duplex in Spring Valley?
Property.
That's an asset. That's a hard asset. You can hit it with a hammer. Debt or equity?
Equity.
It's ownership. Direct or indirect?
Direct.
Your name's on the title. Your name's on the county admin building. Domestic or foreign? Still domestic. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Real estate, long term. Low, moderate, or high risk?
Low.
Yeah, I don't know.
Moderate.
Right now, probably. Well, no, I don't think it's high. I think real estate's still a pretty good deal. But I don't know if I'd put it in the low risk, but I'd put it probably moderate. But it's up to you. It's up to you. Real estate sometimes is a very high risk, sometimes not. Liquid or illiquid? Real estate?
Illiquid.
Takes a while to sell your property. How about Qualcomm? And it's supposed to be all uppercase, but I hate writing it that way. What is Qualcomm? It's a stadium, right?
No.
What do they do? They don't build the cell phone. They don't even make the chips anymore. They make the system now. They used to make the chips, but somebody else does it for them now. They make the system called CDMA, which is in Verizon and Sprint phones. That allows the system to work. CDMA stands for can't do much of anything. No. Code division multiple access. And they make a lot of the processors for these things. They make the processors for these. And I don't think they even make them. They designed them and somebody else built them. So is that security or property? That's security. It's a stock. It's a financial asset. You're buying it. Is it debt or equity? Equity. You own part of Qualcomm. Direct or indirect? Direct. Your name's on the stock, domestic or foreign? They're based in San Diego, but they make most of their money outside the United States. So what are they? They're a domestic company, but they make more money outside the United States than they do inside the United States. Figure that one out. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Stocks are long-term, low, moderate, high. Stocks are high. They're liquid. Yes, stocks are liquid. They're high risk. How about a loan to Uncle Harry?
Security.
It's a security. Is it secure?
No.
Not very. Is it debt or equity?
Yeah.
Debt. You're lending Uncle. Every class, every family has a T.O. Lucas, right? T.O. Direct or indirect? Direct. Domestic or foreign? Until he sends you a postcard from Aruba or something. Short term, any mid term, long term, or infinity. Very infinity. High risk, speculative, liquid, forget it. Nobody's going to buy your debt. Okay, so now, what I want you to do, you have a whole weekend. There's no football this weekend, right? No, okay. You have plenty of time to go back over these notes, write these things down, make sure you understand them. However you study, you decide. But I like to write it out. That's what I do. And then I turn the page over and write it out again. So I used to make flashcards. I don't do that as much anymore. But do it. Study. Learn this. On Tuesday, what we will do when we come back is we will start with we'll bring the plane down. We'll come down. But we'll still be flying over the landscape and our overview of investment types. All right? So I hope you're excited. I tell you, we do goal setting in the other class. My goal is to make this class for you one of the few classes that you will remember 10, 15, 20 years ago that really made a difference in your life and changed your life. And so there you have it. I know it's not going to be for everybody, but I hope it's for you. If you want to add the class, come on up. If you were late, come on up. I need to know you were here. And I'll see you on Tuesday.